What's up, y'all? Kelly Clarkson with Wayfair. My favorite thing about the holidays? Decking out my whole house. It's not a competition, but if it was, well, I'd win the season with Wayfair. Outdoor inflatable Santa? Got it on Wayfair. Trees, lights, and ornaments? Wayfair. Hosting must-haves like dining sets, beds, sheets, and towels? Wayfair. For everything in your style delivered with fast and free shipping, visit Wayfair.com or the Wayfair app to win the season. But again, it's not a competition.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
It's the SNL Hall of Fame podcast with chief conversationalist Bill Kenny, featuring Matt Ardill, with special guest John Schneider, and now curator of the hall, your host JD.
Thank you so much, Kirk Lane. It is my absolute pleasure to be here with you at the SNL Hall of Fame on the SNL Hall of Fame podcast. So there's that. I hope you are buckled up and ready to smirk because we are talking all about Jimmy Fallon today. We're joined by John Schneider, and I have a feeling this one's going to be lit. So I won't waste your time, but I do have to walk inside here, and the key is just under the mat. Where's the mat? How are you going to wipe your feet? Just this once you come in.
Today, I'm walking down the hall to see Matt, and I cannot keep a straight face. Oh, Matt!
Hey, JD! See, you're breaking character there.
Yeah, and that's rather fitting for today's nominee. Matt, who you got for us?
We have the man himself, Jimmy Fallon. 6 foot.
Jimmy Fallon.
Yeah, born September 19th, 1974 in Brooklyn. Born in Bay Bridge, Brooklyn, a mere 11 days before me. His father was a member of a doo-wop group before serving in Vietnam. He grew up addicted to Saturday Night Live. We actually shared the same cast, favorite cast. I was a Mike Myers guy. He was a Dana Carvey guy. He began playing guitar at 13, which is when I began playing Dungeons & Dragons, so our paths diverged. And he inherited his father's musical talents. While called nice and well-mannered, was also the class clown at Sugarty's High School, where he performed and directed high school stage productions and won the school's comedy competition with an impression of Pee Wee Herman. Attending college at the College of St. Rose in Albany for computer science, he transferred to communications and spent weekends performing stand-up, busing into the now-closed Carolines on Broadway in Times Square. He did eventually finish his degree. He dropped out, but finished it on May 9th of 2009. So he got there eventually. So when he dropped out of school to chase his dream of comedy, he moved to LA in 1995, securing management at 21, starting regular gigging. He has 11 writing credits, 13 producer credits, 31 soundtrack credits, and 59 acting and credits, which includes the terrible movie Taxi with his co-star Queen Latifah. He joined the Groundlings, where he appeared in his first film, The Scheme. Shortly after that, he got his first spoken line in Father's Day in 1997, but it was cut. And he then later appeared in Spin City in 1998 as a man selling photographs. He then had his big break after leaving Saturday Night Live. He started hosting Late Night in 2009 before graduating to The Tonight Show after the Leno Conan nonsense. Jimmy took over in 2014 and has continued to do that to this day. In an interview with iconic Canadian comedian David Steinberg on Inside Comedy, a series I really recommend for any comedy nerd, He listed Steve Martin and Dan Aykroyd's wild and crazy guy routines as a big influence as well as Rodney Dangerfield and Monty Python. And honestly, I can really, that really makes a lot of sense to me. I feel all of that in a lot of his comedy, so that jives. Now, he lives in the same building in New York where Margaret Hamilton and James Cagney once lived, and he studied under Gordon Hunt, Helen Hunt's father. Yeah, so that was his acting teacher. The first person save Steve Allen to become the host of The Tonight Show without having to first do a stint as a guest host. Weirdly, he was one of the 50 most beautiful people in the world in 2002, decided by People magazine. But I mean, young Jimmy Fallon was a very pretty boy, so I can see that. This does not surprise me in the least. His first concert, can you guess what his first concert was?
No.
Weird Al Yankovic.
Oh, yeah, that makes sense.
That totally makes sense. Yeah. And Jimmy is just, he's renowned as a nice guy. He's quoted as saying, "I'd like to see people laugh who are normally serious. Everyone looks so much better when they smile." That's Jimmy Fallon.
Well put, Jimmy. Well put. And I bet down in the conversation room, our friend John Schneider has a big Cheshire cat grin as he sits with Bill Kenny and they get ready to reminisce about old times at the SNN. Bill, take it away.
Yes, thank you, Matt and JD. Welcome into the conversation. My name is Bill. We have a great nominee today. One of the most famous people to come out of SNL in the last 25 years, Mr. Jimmy Fallon. This is going to be a fun conversation because if you watch or listen to the Saturday Night Network, you've heard John and I go back and forth on this gentleman quite a bit. So I had to bring in the creator and the host of the Saturday Night Network and my good friend, John Schneider. John, how are you today?
I'm doing well. Nice to meet you, Bill.
Yes.
Thank you for having me.
It's been long time coming, John. So
No, it's great to be here. This is a conversation that we've been waiting to have for many years. And I would like to preface the conversation by saying that Bill is one of the greatest friends I have made in this community. And whatever we discuss in the next hour is not a reflection on our friendship.
Listen, yeah, and thank you for that. And great friends can have great debates and great disagreements about things, especially when they're fun disagreements, such as this one. This is something that's been brewing, as you said, for quite a while, John. I don't remember where the origins of it are. I know it came up in the cast countdown that we did a few years ago and then the host countdown that we did last summer, talking about Jimmy Fallon, your love for him and my ambivalence, we'll say. I will preface that I am not a hater of Jimmy Fallon. We'll get into it, but there are things about his tenure on the show and kind of his legacy being rewritten that bother me. But we'll get into all that and we'll find out if he is worthy of the SNL Hall of Fame.
I agree. I do feel like his legacy has been rewritten. And I feel like because he is so much in the spotlight for the last 25 years, everyone has a strong opinion on Jimmy Fallon. My opinion and my perception of his career is not, you know, doesn't mean that everybody has to feel the same way. Doesn't mean I'm going to convince you today to feel differently. But I do feel that out of every single person, and I've listened to every episode of the SNL Hall of Fame going back to the beginning, all seven seasons, I think out of every single person that's been nominated for the SNL Hall of Fame, nobody has a more unique case than Jimmy Fallon.
I would agree. And I think that his post-SNL career has colored, maybe brought people over to him. Whereas if we were talking about him and the last thing we were talking about that he made really kind of crappy movies in the early 2000s, like Taxi, fever pitch. Like, if that was it, if we were talking about the last 20 years kind of being a void in Fallon's career, I don't know how he would fit into this conversation. But so what's going over at on the Saturday Night Network, John? What do you have going on over there?
We're deep in the midst of our coverage of season 50, headed towards the finish line. Not sure when this episode is going to drop exactly, but we just wrapped up a whole great week talking about Morgan Wallen heading back to God's country. So if you missed any of our coverage of that episode, that dates this episode in a time and place probably. But, you know, things have been going great. We are through the 50th anniversary special, which was truly one of the greatest nights of my life. Just getting to cover that and getting to be in New York and on the red carpet. So if you missed any of our coverage over there, really just so cool to get to talk to all of the people that we, you know, dream of getting a chance to talk to. So that was just like unbelievable experience. I'm still on a high from the 50th special. I don't know if you feel the same way, Bill, but I just feel like, you know, no matter what happens between now and the end of the season, I feel like just like the fun of the 50th has like given me rose colored glasses for this entire season. So I'm just having a great time getting to cover it. And I hope that you've been along the journey with us. And in case you haven't, and you want to jump into some of our off season coverage, we will have a fun series that Bill and I will be taking you through the summer on with counting down the greatest SNL episodes of all time. So it's a really fun time to be an SNL fan. Hopefully you could join us over at the SNN.
Yeah, absolutely. And your coverage, I've told you, but I'll say it again, like I was so proud of watching you and James on the red carpet, the conversations that you got to have. And I will say, you know, feelings of Fallon aside, your conversation with Jimmy Fallon was the highlight for me. So that's saying something, because the way you guys vibed was just so incredible. And I'll say right at the top here that all the problems I may have with Fallon, his love for the history of the show, kind of like a baseball player who appreciates the history of the game, of their team, I really can appreciate that part of Fallon, and it showed while you were talking to him.
Yeah, and that will be one of the major arguments for him to get into the Hall of Fame, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah,
we'll talk about how that infiltrated his actual career. But he never stopped being a fan of the show from the moment he got cast to right now. And I think that that is really cool, no matter how strong of a fan you are of Saturday Night Live, to know that you have somebody inside the building who appreciates the show as much as you do.
Yeah. So let's get into it. Jimmy Fallon joins the show in season 24. We're in the midst of a silver era. We've got the Will Ferrell, Sherry O'Terry, Molly Shannons of it all. They've been doing it for a few years at this point. Only one season as a featured player. He comes in with Horatio Sanz and Chris Parnell. Stays six seasons. Does four at the Weekend Update desk with Tina Fey. And, you know, John, he predates your era of when you started. Obviously, you went back and watched all of the episodes after the 40th. So was it the 40th and his opening with Justin Timberlake that really kind of made you a Fallon fan, or is there something else that kind of brought you into the Fallon of it all?
I was a big pop music fan and a big NSYNC fan, and then Justin Timberlake. And when he hosts in season 29, you know, Jimmy's last season as a cast member, getting to see them do Barry Gibb Talk Show and their camaraderie, there's a love-hate relationship for a lot of people with them, you know, their bromance. But I always felt like this is, like, I related to a lot of, like, my best friends in real life. I sort of have that, like, Jimmy-Justin relationship with, where we would, like, make music videos together. And I always felt like that I related to Jimmy in terms of, like, his ability to, like, connect with people. So I probably would say it came in the later part of his career when I started tuning into the show and then just seeing, like, you know, them get back together and you know, eventually on Jimmy's late night shows, them reconnecting. So I think I was always a fan of Jimmy, but of course, yeah, the 40th, that opening, I talked about it many times. That was like a huge inspiration for me, the Jimmy Justin opening up the 40th, of like just being inspired to go back and watch all the episodes of the show. That was a really cool experience.
Yeah. And that is an epic moment. We got a much quieter cold open for the 50th. And I like that too. But the 40th with all of the singing, dancing was incredible with Jimmy and Justin. Where should we start as far as his career as a cast member, John? Where would you like to begin?
So I want to take this chronologically because I feel like the story of Jimmy Fallon on the show, it takes different trajectories. And I think that when he comes onto the show in season 24, he is one of the best prospects the show has ever had. He is multi-talented, and you could see it right away. In the first episode, there is a very famous sketch where they do the Hollywood Squares, where they completely break down and fall. And you see Jimmy do an impression of former cast member Gilbert Gottfried.
I've got to take Gilbert Gottfried to block.
Okay, Gilbert.
I am holding my entire intestinal tract in my own hands, and that's not good.
The voice of a parrot in Aladdin, Gilbert. According to Cosmo, one out of five men lie about the size of this.
Oh, gee, I don't know. Maybe the size of their lower intestine.
Right away, I think if you're watching that episode live, you're like, whoa, who is this kid? Who is this impressionist? Is he going to be one of the greatest impressionists in the history of the show? Obviously, they had Daryl at that point, but you had to be really impressed with what you saw from him there.
Yeah, he's right out of the gates. And I love that you say one of the best prospects, because I think that's where my issues begin, because he is. And I don't know that he ever fulfills that part of it. Now, he does come hot out of the gate, as you said, with the Hollywood Squares. The song parodies at the Weekend Update desk, even though they're very Sandler-esque, he finds his own twist to them. And I do really enjoy what he does with those. And that's pretty early on. I think his first one is in October of that season. So
I think it's episode 4. And those song parodies are fantastic. I mean, he still does them to this day on The Tonight Show, where he'll, you know, recap a month and talk about everything that happened in that month. And I do think that those are some of my favorite things to go back and watch, just to see him incorporate popular music at the time with some really fun like subjects, whether it's, you know, Halloween or St. Patrick's Day, whatever it is. Those song parodies are brilliant when he comes on Colin Quinn's version of Weekend Update. And I think that those first two seasons, season 24 and 25, for like a rookie and a sophomore, I do think he's on a Hall of Fame trajectory for those two seasons. And I'll explain to you why, because I think that first season, like I said, the Gilbert Gottfried Hollywood Squares, the song parodies, he does a bunch of them and everyone gets really excited. And he sort of gets labeled with this next star of SNL. He's a good looking guy. I think that the teen fans, the younger fans of the show fall in love with him very quickly. And they, you know, establish him as like the reason why a new generation is going to watch the show. I mean, remember, they, you know, for all of the great ensemble cast and recurring characters that they had in seasons 21, 22, 23, they didn't have that guy on the show who was, you know, the heartthrob. And he was that at first, but he didn't always play into it that early on. I think that'll come later when he becomes a Weekend Update anchor that we could talk about. But I think for these first couple seasons, he does a really good job to fulfill that potential. There's a sketch bill that I think would be really good to reference for the listeners to go check out, where, you know, everyone knows Fallon's Jerry Seinfeld impression. And actually, in the first season, he's going to do a point counterpoint on Weekend Update with Fallon. But there's a sketch from the Joan Allen episode in that first season called Tarmac Talk, which I think is a really, really good sketch, where it's towards the end of the night and it's Tim Meadows and Joan Allen who decide to host a talk show on the tarmac at an airport. And they interview Jerry Seinfeld, and the entire time as planes go by or land, they start flying in the air and he's screaming in Jerry Seinfeld's voice. And when you watch it, you just see like the brilliance of Fallon, who's not just an impressionist, but can use the impressions in context of a sketch in a way that a lot of other people who are great impressionists don't have the ability to be that flexible. So I think like it's a great sketch to go check out.
Absolutely. And I think SNL was better at that point. We've seen some of the impressionists over the last few years, like Melissa Villaseñor, not get the airtime. Chloe Fineman does, but not as much as we would like to see. They seem to find a better way to work it in at that point in the show. And that's a great example of it. I do love that point counterpoint. I think that's a great, you know, some people, I don't know how you feel. I don't know that we've ever talked about this, John. You know, when the real person comes in and the person's doing an impression, it can get a little trite, Sometimes it really works. Sometimes it doesn't. I think there's two examples with Fallon where it really works. And I think the Seinfeld one in the early years is one of the best ones, where bringing the actual person in to hear the impression being done is very, very funny.
First, they're swing dancing. Now they want us to wear a vest. It's stupid. It looks stupid. I say, let's not wear the vest. We got to stop these people.
I know. And those commercials, I mean, they're not even dancing for us anymore.
Yeah, it's just this sullen line of teenage automatons barking out orders.
We're going to dress you up in a vest. We're going to dress you up in a vest.
We're going to dress you up in a vest.
You're funny.
So are you. So are you.
Was the second one Mick Jagger?
Well, actually three then. No, yeah, that one too. There's another one at Weekend Update later in the career that we can talk about, but I'll just say it. De Niro. I think when De Niro comes on, he's already Weekend Update anchor at that point, and he had crushed Meet the Parents the week before and was doing his De Niro impression, which is very good. You know, a lot of his impressions are derivative of somebody else. But I think this one is pretty good. Everybody had a De Niro, like they have a Lorne. But I think it's really great. And they bring De Niro in before all the hosting gigs and kind of the Trump era cameos that De Niro was doing. This is early on where it was still a really huge deal. I think this is the third time De Niro showed up on the show. And you can just hear from the audience reaction. And Fallon goes into the, you're going to meet me. You're going to meet me. And De Niro just pats his arm. Jimmy, I don't say that.
Right. And it's like the thing, I think Jimmy does have a really great ability to just like cue in to one particular thing about an impression and then like do it to death. So like that, I do understand people who could probably get annoyed by hearing him do the same impression or the same impressions for the last like 25 years. But at one point, the impression was so novel that it was exciting. And I think like that is the beginning of his career. And in season one, so his season one, 24, is to me one of the better, more exciting rookie seasons. I think if you're around between season 24 and 25, you are so excited about the potential of Jimmy Fallon as an SNL cast member. And I think in season 25, we can talk about, you know, where that continues to grow, because I think he has a brilliant sophomore season as well, where we get the Boston Teens, which is, you know, Tina and Rachel's sketch that they end up bringing into the show, but they make Jimmy very much a part of it. And I think that's his first moment where he's just really showing that he could lead Saturday Night Live and maybe be the guy after Will Ferrell. And I, obviously, you know, Boston Teens becomes a very beloved sketch that we're going to see like 20 times on the show.
And Sully, quit goofing around. If you're done, you know, you just go finish your project or polish your tools.
Tommy, please tell me you got him saying polish my tools.
All right, go ahead. Yeah, laugh it up, both of you. Go ahead, laugh it up. Because, you know, when you graduate, then you'll be who's going to be laughing. What are you going to do when you graduate?
I'm going to be the first rapper to rap the national anthem at a Red Sox World Series game. No, Ma!
This is very early on, as you said, season two. They do this 12 times, plus twice when he hosts it. And it's one of those catchphrase machines, along with being a very funny sketch, a word you can't say anymore, probably shouldn't have been saying then. That is a huge part of it. But I know we were all saying it. We weren't as aware of the things that we were saying maybe back in the late 90s. But, you know, the whole I love that they reference it when he comes back and hosts and Kate McKinnon's playing their daughter. And she has corrected them from saying "you are so" to "you are so intellectually disabled," and then get the Rachel, you know, "you are" at the end of it. This is a great one, and there's a lot of fun play here. Dratch carries a lot of the heavy load, but I think Fallon is very, very good in this role.
Yeah, but I think, you know, again, obviously the writing in it comes from a different time and place, and that's not to justify, you know, some of the language. But I do think, like, when I think of the sketch, I don't necessarily think about the language as much no. Because maybe I'm not as, like, teed into the Boston slang and all of that stuff. Like, because I'm not from that area, it doesn't mean as much to me. That's part of it. Obviously, the Noma, all of that is, like, all very fun. But I do think that the reason why the sketch always really appealed to me was, you know, Jimmy's ability to be like the voice of the audience and call out like what's happening around him as like, okay, well, this is really weird. Like, what's happening with Horatio's character, Frankie? Like, what's like, okay, well, that guy's this. And oh yeah, like that girl is very attractive for whatever reason. Like, I think like he becomes like a very good MC in this sketch, like through his character. And I think that's just because like that's who Jimmy is. He is a naturally great host.
Yeah. And when you hear 12 times, you kind of groan because sometimes it's just paint by number. But I think they did find different. Obviously, there was a lot of the same points being hit in each one, you know, ending with Tommy, tell me you got that and things like that. But they found different scenarios where it wasn't so trite every single time. And I think this is a great use of the hosts. You know, this is something that to this day, if you find a host that might not be the strongest and you put them in a great sketch like this, I think of people like Gwyneth Paltrow, Britney Spears, fantastic, probably my favorite Boston Teens, where she's the milkmaid and she's churning the butter. I think that's one of the better ones. So I this is a great way to use the host in a recurring sketch as well.
I also think that the sketch itself is probably the seeds of the future of his career, because it always starts off, or the sketch is completely done from the POV of him talking into a camera directly. And I talk about this a lot with current cast members about how, you know, when an audience feels like they don't know them well enough, the best thing to do is like play yourself in the monologue or something like that, because then we can build a connection to you. And I feel like the audience builds a connection when he opens up a Boston Teen sketch as Pat Sullivan talking directly to the guy behind the camera who's watching everything that's going on. It's like the early version of what Jimmy would end up being, which is like the host of all hosts.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, there's another sketch in season 25 that debuts that is a personal guilty favorite of mine that he does with Chris Parnell, the Bloater Brothers. And it's these two awkward guys with these really, 70s fros sitting in different scenarios and, trying to hit on women. And they're really, really bad at it. And it's a great use of Fallon laughing in sketches because he's actually supposed to laugh in this, John. Are you a fan of the Bloater Brothers?
I am a big fan of the Bloater Brothers. And I do feel like if Parnell doesn't get fired, they do this more times.
Yeah.
And this probably becomes a more prolific sketch. But it is a really, really solid one. I do think the pairing, obviously he comes in with Horatio and Parnell, and everyone will remember Jimmy and Horatio's friendship and relationship on the show. But him and Parnell together is magic. And you get to see it through the sketch that they both like. Jimmy is really the type of person who is sort of like a sponge. He becomes, and this is probably why he's to me a pretty good interviewer, because he just really molds and adapts to the people around him. And I think that when he's with Will Ferrell, he becomes more like Will Ferrell. When he's with Parnell, he becomes more like Parnell. And then Horatio, obviously for the good and the bad of it, he becomes more like Horatio when he's with him. So I think in this case with Parnell, who's the guy who could just totally, be the Iceman, I do think that he adapts to what the sketch needs from him. So this to me is like a really fun pairing that I do wish we got more of on the show.
Yeah. And they do this 6 times, as you said, if Parnes was able to stick around, and I mean, he does come back obviously, but it is something that we probably would have seen more of. There's a lot of really good moments in this. And the fact that the Julianne Margulies one stands out because they actually get the girl and they don't know what to do. So that's always fun when you turn the sketch on its head. These guys who are trying to be ladies' men cannot get a woman to save their lives, and they actually have one that's interested and they can't close the deal. And Anna just playing the great bartender who's, calling them out on all their shit. Love that.
And it also works on a meta level because, Pete Davidson, like women were sort of like throwing themselves at Jimmy. Like you hear Nicole Kidman talk about how she like wanted to go on a date with Jimmy, or she like went to Jimmy's apartment and he just played video games. Like he's become this sort of like the next big thing. on SNL. So I think him playing somebody who doesn't know how to talk to women is also a really, really fun meta character for him to play. So yeah, there's a lot of things I love about the Blood Brothers.
Yeah. Where would you like to go next, John?
Well, I think the other one from season 25 is the Nick Burns company computer guy. Yes. And, you know, that one, I've always had a really soft spot for this one because I do feel like this is Jimmy trying to be a part of that like late 80s, early 90s cast where you have a character that has a theme song that gets played. Like, it's in a different era, so you don't get as much of this. But I think, like, this to me is... like they will drop the whole theme songs for like many, many years. And this is like the one that really stands out as being like just the character that is clearly already defined for you when the sketch starts. So you know what to expect from it. And that's something like that we saw a lot in the 90s. And I think it was just very cool for him to come in. And I love getting to watch this sketch and seeing, you know, through all the incarnations of it, the computers develop and technology grow. It's really cool.
So great. I'm a huge fan of looking at old tech and shows and getting to see those old Apple computers and talking about, I think they mentioned Blackberries at some point. Yeah, it is a rare theme song in the era. I think the only other one that really sticks out is Debbie Downer, which comes a little bit later than this. But yeah, to have the whole thing explained to you before we even get into the beats of the actual sketch. And it's very relatable because if anybody who's ever worked in any kind of office knows what these IT guys are like to this day, I know my wife deals with this stuff all the time with computers that she has to return and things like that. And they're just so above you because they understand the tech so much better than the rest of us.
Well, I tried to run that Norton program to fix it, but it didn't work. And I don't know.
That's because Norton Utilities can only detect a virus. It can't repair your hard drive after you download an infected program, Patch Adams.
Nick, the computer guy. He'll fix your computer, then he's gonna make fun of you. Cause he's Nick Burns, your company's computer guy.
Like, yeah, talking about screensavers when that was still a thing on computers. And yeah, I mean, you get a lot of good people in this. Him, he's got a few lines in this as well that he always drops, like, move, let me do it. Yeah, I think this is great use of Jimmy.
Agreed. And that's why I do think his season 25 is really great. Like for being somebody who's only been on the show a couple of years, you already have a bunch of characters. You're a great impressionist. People are loving you. I feel like I said, his first 2 years, absolute Hall of Fame trajectory.
Yeah. And we're at the point, I mean, this is a different era where people don't necessarily stay for 10 or 12 years. Will's at the end of his fifth season by this point. So people are, and he's already kind of becoming a movie star. He hasn't really become the mega star that he'll become in just a few years, but he's probably eyeing the door. He does end up staying another 2 years. So as you said, almost the passing of the baton, trying to make Fallon the star of the show, I think it works really well in these first two seasons. So I agree with you on that point.
Then we're going to get to a point between season 25 and 26 where he is cast as the next update anchor as part of a duo for the first time in a very long time with Tina Fey. And I probably enjoy Tina and Jimmy's update more than most. I do think it's extremely novel and they are always trying things and it is a lot of fun. However, I am in agreement with probably you and a lot of people that I think that that probably capped Jimmy's potential as an all-time great on the show. I think that he really focuses on being, you know, the face of the show on Weekend Update. He does a lot of fun things over there, but he definitely starts to limit himself into his recurring sketches, like the things that we're going to see in this season, like Jarrett's Room and Jeffrey's and stuff like that. And it wouldn't be for another, you know, couple of seasons until we start to see him like post Will Ferrell really start to be pushed more back into sketches. But I think that if I was coaching him, I would say you can't not take the opportunity as a Weekend Update anchor, but I would have been more weary of trying to halt where he was headed as just a cast member.
Yeah, it is an interesting fork in the road. And this is a different time for many different reasons. It's, I think, 17 years at this point since we've had two hosts on Weekend Update, somewhere around there. It's been a very long time. It predated my watching the show. So this was very novel in 2000. We're coming off the Colin Quinn era, which is bumpy, to put it nicely. I enjoy some of Colin's stuff, but it certainly wasn't everybody's cup of tea. So you're bringing in Tina Fey, who's an unknown at this point. You know, she's made a couple appearances in monologues and things like that. Jimmy's, as you said, red hot coming off his first two seasons. So the pairing is interesting. And it is a different era when the Weekend Update hosts are in sketches. Now, Tina doesn't do a lot of sketch work, but Jimmy's still trying to. But I think he is spread too thin. And some of the recurring characters that we get here are not great. But his update tenure, I don't know. I go back and forth in this. And he said it himself. He was the kid that didn't study, and he was paired with the smart girl. And Tina is obviously, you know, so great at doing Weekend Update. She probably could have done it herself very well. But they wanted that great pairing between these two. So I don't know. I go back and forth on this part of it, John.
Yeah, it's tough because I think at the beginning, Tina is brilliant on updates. So refreshing, so great. I do think that Tina eventually falls into like a little bit of a rut of like the pressure of trying to have something to say every single week, and it doesn't always work. And I think that Jimmy gets better as a Weekend Update anchor as it goes on through the four seasons. Like, I think he is so raw and green that first season as an update anchor that it doesn't fully click. But I get it. Like, I totally get if you're producing the show why you want somebody like Jimmy to be there, especially Will is still going to be the star of the show for another couple of seasons. But yeah, like, I don't think what he does in season 26, 27, we'll talk about, I guess, 28 in a little bit, which I think is an interesting season for him. But 26 and 27, if we're talking about this middle part of his 6 years, I don't think it's Hall of Fame worthy. I think it's really, really stops some of the momentum. When we wrap up our conversation, I'll sort of tell you why. I think overall, like, we can maybe forget about some of these things and sort of look towards the good. But as far as, you know, the moments that we're going to get from him beyond Weekend Update here, I do think that there's some cool things like the season's greetings we start to get in season 26, where you're going to get him and Catan and Tracy and Horatio doing the I Wish It Was Christmas Today songs. Those to me are so fun whenever they came on. And, they come from, you know, Jimmy and Horatio just hanging out in their office and just, shooting the shit and trying to get something on. And I think that those to me were some of my favorite things I saw from them.
26 and 27 are tough for me, and I think this is kind of where I soured on him in the original watching of the show, because it becomes not even the update part of it, because as we said, there are some good nuggets there. And to kind of extrapolate on it, I love that the meta-ness that update has become. So after Jimmy leaves, Amy Poehler comes in, and the jokes about, like, you know, way before Stefan and Seth, you had Jimmy and Tina having a kid together, Jimmy coming back to the show and you know, him and Amy having a beef about who gets to be with Tina. And even up until Amy hosting, where you had the duo between Seth and Amy and Jimmy and Tina. So there's a lot of stuff that's gone on over the last 25 years that's been a lot of fun that start with this Weekend Update. But as far as the sketches, this is where my issues are. It becomes a big Horatio Jimmy laugh fest. There's not a lot of substance to the sketches that we're getting from him. Jarrett's room sticks out like one of my least favorites that
really?
We've ever gotten. Yeah, I don't.
See, I don't. I think that the Horatio Jimmy problems are really more evident for me in seasons 28 and 29. Hmm. I think for 26 and 27. When you get like Jarrett's room and stuff like that, like, yes, they're laughing and being goofballs, but like, they're playing college students that are high. Like, I don't think that is like, I think in the world of the sketch, it works for me. Like, I always like this, 'cause like, I was very much like, I was probably a little young for this, but I have a sister who's 9 years older than me. There was a lot of like older people at my house always when I was this age and a kid. Like American Pie was like my favorite movie, like even when I was like way too little to like even consider, you know, doing the things that they were doing in the movie. So for me, this was like taking place in like the American Pie universe of like just college students like doing dumb stuff. And I felt like I just thought that these guys were so cool. So I didn't have a problem with this. I think the things that you're talking about really come in like season 28 post Will Ferrell, where you get a sketch like Aquarium Repairmen, where the two of them just can't even get through their lines because they're making each other laugh so much. And it just becomes such a problem where it just, it's not even like they're trying not to laugh. Like they're just letting go of all pretenses here. And the show is starting to look like, as Lauren would say, like Carol Burnett, where it's just like, how can we just get each other to break because we don't trust the material enough to be able to have the audience do that. So I do feel like, as far as the timeline is concerned, for me, it is probably like a later career thing. And I could totally understand why that soured a lot of people on Jimmy.
Yeah. And to be fair, he does own this. I know in a lot of the documentaries that came out around the 50th, you know, the Cowbell one, especially where he talks about, you know, this was the beginning of him becoming the guy who breaks and sketches. And I appreciate that part of him, that he's able to say that he is that guy. And stuff like Cowbell doesn't bother me. Stuff like Debbie Downer doesn't bother me. And we've talked about this to a big extent. You know, we talked about this with Beavis and Butthead last year, when it's more, you put it perfectly, John. So I want to give you the words for it. When someone breaks, how you feel about it.
To me, someone breaking on SNL isn't funny. It's somebody trying not to break. That's funny.
Exactly. And I think in those two iconic sketches, Debbie Downer and Cowbell, people are trying not to break. And I can't imagine anybody, like Chris Parnell almost breaks in Cowbell and he never breaks. You know, Heidi Gardner breaks in Beavis and Butthead. She never. So there are instances where it's for the fun of the show, as you said. But I don't know. I have a problem with Jarrett's Room and I have a problem with Leatherman. So I don't
really. Do you know Tom Davis wrote Leatherman? Does that change your mind?
I do know that he wrote that. And I think the sketch itself has potential, but the screaming Horatio really bugs me, and the fact that they're trying to break each other up. So
yeah, I agree. You know, I go back and forth a little bit where I'm watching it. I'm like, oh, this is kind of fun. Like, it's kind of fun to see the camaraderie between these two people. This is obviously, you know, pre-Horatio, like all the stuff coming out about him and his time at the show and him sort of being what we thought was banned from the show. But I guess he was. Did I tell you the story about Horatio with me at the line?
No.
Okay. Yeah, this is good. So I was interviewing people for the 50th red carpet, and next to me was Pop Crave, and they were interviewing Horatio Sanz, and I could see it out of the corner of my eye, like while I was doing an interview. And I was thinking in my head, I was like, I promise you, they have no idea who Horatio is. They just saw like an SNL cast member and they're just like, hey, like say whatever for Pop Crave. Anyways, so I finish up an interview and I like turn around and Horatio is like, probably like right next to me. Like he's like looking right at me, ready for me to say like, hey, Horatio, like, do you want to come for an interview? And I just like turn back around to James and I'm like, nope, not doing this. Absolutely not.
Love that. If you don't know, use your Google machines and go look it up to see what John is referencing. Yeah, it's not great.
I was surprised he was there. That was crazy.
I was very surprised that he was there. But, you know.
Yeah. Anyways, but back to this. I don't love all the breaking in these sketches. I do think like SNL is really going to lean into it hard, especially when you get to like Saddam Hussein and Osama bin Laden, and you're going to put Horatio and Jimmy together and they're going to have phone calls and they're going to try and make each other laugh from, you know, different parts of the studio. And it just becomes a thing where in a post Will Ferrell world, we're looking at seasons 28, 29, and then Jimmy won't be around for 30. But the show is like really falling off a cliff pretty quickly to try and find an identity and a voice. And I think that they just lean hard into this dynamic duo with Horatio and Jimmy. And I think Jimmy, for being so accommodating, so easy to adapt, I think he just like leans on the wrong things and the wrong tendencies. And to me, it's all about like miss potential with him, where you can watch sketches like Barry Gibb Talk Show, which I love, and you see that in season 29, where you just see the brilliance of, like, this is the same guy from season 24 who was doing the tarmac talk as Seinfeld and could have been doing this for years on the show. And for some reason or another, it sort of falls apart after he gets Weekend Update, where he still becomes the face and people are really excited to see him. But I think as a diehard SNL superfan who goes back and analyzes all these episodes, you're just like, wow, he could have been the star of the show.
Absolutely. I think it's very interesting. And I think my main issue with him getting into the Hall of Fame, which you're trying hard to convince me, John. So and we talk about this with sports too, because we like to do that. Was he ever the leader in the clubhouse? Was he ever the guy who was the go-to? So you have Will Ferrell, who's clearly the star of the show until he leaves in 2002. So Jimmy only has two seasons to try to overtake that. And as you said, season 29 is one of the worst seasons of all time. And it's not all his fault. There's a lot going on. A lot of, trying to replace Will Ferrell is a Herculean task. There's no way to really do it. But they can't find their footing in any way, shape, or form. And him being the face of that and not taking the reins is part of my issue with Jimmy.
Well, I think that on a first watch or a casual watch of all of these episodes, you would say that Jimmy was the star post Will Ferrell. But I think on a deeper watch and in a more analytical watch, you will realize that Amy Poehler was the real star post Will Ferrell. And it's not as easy to spot and see. But when you go through those episodes and you're looking for, in a rough time, you're looking for like what are saving these episodes from being bottom tier, a lot of it is Amy really pushing sketches forward and just being like that absolute dynamo, like when she gets cast on the show. So to me, like, I would say if we're just evaluating the six seasons themselves, I don't know that you can argue that Jimmy has a Hall of Fame SNL career. You could say that there's, again, the first two seasons, I think Hall of Fame worthy. I think you can argue that maybe he gets the Hall of Very Good. But I think that ultimately, and I don't know if you want to dive into any other sketches before I start to do like some summary, but
I think the only one we really didn't touch on that he did a lot was Joey Mack. I don't know how you feel about that. I actually enjoy that one.
Yeah, I do like that one too. That one is just really, that's actually an incredible tour de force from him, where he's basically doing a one-man show and doing a bunch of different voices at the same time. And again, you get to see it. He does it, I think, like four or five times, and I really enjoyed it. But it's like, you watch this stuff and you could probably relate to some other cast members that you've seen this with, where it's like, where is this Jimmy Fallon? You know?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And you mentioned Barry Gibb, which is great. And him and JT, again, that dynamic between the two of them is very, very good. But we're talking about his six seasons as a cast member. Only does it once. They do it seven times total. It's always when he's either hosting or comes back in a cameo role. So I don't know if we can completely give him credit as a cast member for this particular sketch, but it is a great sketch with Barry Gibb Talk Show.
We've got a great show for you tonight. Let's get right to it. This is my show, and this is a no-nonsense show. I'm not going to take any crap from nobody. This week's election, Robin, did you vote?
No.
No, you didn't vote?
No, I didn't.
Okay. Harry Hannah Huffington. Yeah, saw this thing from the inside. What effect do you think this is going to have on California politics as a whole?
Yeah, it is very incredible. I think the other one I want to point out from while he was still a cast member is Top of the Morning that he does with Seth Meyers. I think that is like a really fun duo, and Seth sort of, you know, comes in towards the end of Jimmy's career. But I do think, like, you know, that's like one of the better Seth sketches that we get before he becomes an Upstate anchor. So that's another fun one there. But yeah, it is really the post SNL career SNL cast member career that I think puts him over the edge for me as a Hall of Fame candidate. And I'll go back to, before I sort of explain, you know, what I see, which is, you know, he's going to come back a few times. He's going to host three times in what I think are some brilliant hosting appearances. Like, you watch it and you like don't expect that this is going to be the Jimmy we're going to get. And I think he like just becomes fully formed. But I remember at the 40th anniversary hearing about a conversation that Dan Aykroyd had with Jimmy Fallon. And he spoke to him and he said to Jimmy, you know, for many years, I was the guy who brought the SNL world together. Danny was the one who would organize the parties when people were in certain cities. He was the one who would just cheerlead and get on stage and get the party going through the Blues Brothers. Danny was the face of the show for generations. And I remember he passed that torch over to Jimmy at the 40th anniversary, and it sort of changed my perspective on it, where we have this guy who is the biggest fan of SNL that's ever been cast on the show. He has a pretty good, but probably unfulfilled career as far as like his potential is concerned. But what he represents to the show becomes really important when he sort of passes that torch from Danny to Jimmy, and he comes on stage and he's the one that introduces Prince at the 40th anniversary after party. And he's the one that becomes like the biggest cheerleader for the show. And you hear it through my conversation with him at the red carpet. And I think that like, that is the reason why he is a Hall of Famer, because his story and what he represents to Saturday Night Live is too important to leave out of the Hall of Fame.
That's very fair. And, you know, we are talking about him as a cast member, but you can't not look at everything that you just said so great. And those hosting gigs are really, really good. Season 39, I think, is an instant classic. I think it's one of those that we'll talk about this summer when we talk about the greatest episodes of SNL over at the Saturday Night Network. 37 has one of the greatest monologues of all time. With Baby Please Come Home. And 42 is good as well. And he does cameo 15 times. So we do get to see him quite a bit on the show. He's right down the elevator at the Tonight Show, which he's been hosting since 2014. So yeah, I mean, the connection to all of that, him hosting the homecoming concert this past February for SNL 50, was quite a badge of honor. Whether or not you think he did great, I mean, I think he did fairly well. Didn't love the Blues Brothers that he did, but other than that, I think he helmed it very well, and I can't imagine anybody else that would have done it quite as good. So, yeah, I've come around on Jimmy because of these things that we're talking about right now.
Yeah, and I think you can't not include it. Like, I know when Jamie first started the Hall of Fame, he was very clear to distinctify the differences between, like, we're voting somebody in as a cast member or as a host. But I think Jimmy is the type of person where you have to encompass everything he brings to the show. Like you said, that first time he hosts, he has one of the greatest monologues in SNL history. I think when we did our greatest episode draft, trying to draft segments, that one was one of the first ones where you just see the fun of the show with everyone dancing around the stage. He brings the party. He brings back Boston Teens. He does the Michael Bublé Christmas duets, which I think everybody loves. There's the reprise of him in the mirror with Andy Samberg playing Jimmy Fallon. So I do think that's great. He brings back Horatio and Catan, so you sort of get that. He does a Weekend Update joke off, which is very memorable, where you get Amy and Seth and Tina back together. So like, it's just, it's a nostalgic episode with all of the feels. That one with him and Justin Timberlake, I remember being in New York City for that night in 2013 and watching that and just seeing like how great he was, you know, doing the monologue with Paul McCartney, Barry Gibb talk show, him with Michael Bloomberg talking about, you know, he's going to take over the Tonight Show and Michael Bloomberg and his role as mayor. You know, there's a lot of really fun things. He does this great sketch with Cecily Strong, The Baby It's Cold Outside. And then the most recent one in 2017, which was actually the week after I went to sit in the audience for the first time. And I was like, I got the Louis C.K. episode instead of the Jimmy Fallon episode. I was like, ah. But he takes over the studio and they transform the entire floor for him to honor David Bowie. And he just like does this crazy monologue that's like a huge party. And again, like I look at this guy who he's on TV, you know, four or five nights a week. You see him all the time. So you may be overexposed to Jimmy Fallon and his, you know, interviews and games that he plays with all these celebrities. But just as far as what he represents to the institution of Saturday Night Live and to pop culture in general, I think is so important because he just brings the life to the party. I don't know that SNL can continue for another 50 years without having somebody like Jimmy as an alumni who consistently champions the show. So his story is just too important for me, Bill.
Yeah, and the connections. I mean, this is a different era. There's a lot more ways to watch things. There's streaming and all of that. But I love that there's so many different connections that still are maintained to this day. You know, a lot of it was around the 50th, but you do get, like Seth has on his show, he has Amy on his show quite a bit. On Jimmy, he's had Tina. He had Will Ferrell in one of my favorite moments ever with Jimmy Fallon, where they did Don't Stop Believin'. I'm sure you've seen this, but it's so great. So there's this connection that you didn't get from the 70s and the 80s. And again, there weren't as many outlets, but to see these cast members 10, 15, 20 years later still be friends, still get along, still have the comedy chops to work together. And Jimmy's a big part of that. So I completely agree with you.
Yeah. And I remember when he brought Dana Carvey onto the Tonight Show to reprise Chopping Broccoli. Like, you know, these are things that you only get it because he's such a big fan of the show. So, you know, this isn't a Hall of Fame of the Tonight Show. This is Hall of Fame of Saturday Night Live. But still, I think when the voters are considering their, you know, ballots this spring, I just think, like, you can't tell the story of SNL without Jimmy.
Yeah. So John, we've talked about a lot of different sketches, a lot of different moments, some good, some bad. But I think the overall swath of Jimmy Fallon's career is definitely worthy of discussing in the SNL Hall of Fame. Here's your chance to kind of put a button on it. Tell everybody, the viewers, the listeners, and the people around the water cooler why they should vote for Jimmy into the SNL Hall of Fame.
I think this is the perfect season to vote Jimmy in. As you know, JD said, we're going to get unlimited votes here. So we're really trying to fill the Hall of Fame with people who we could put a stamp on and close the books for now and say, like, these are the best representatives of the history of the show, the people who came on and performed the best. And I think that, yes, there are a lot of question marks when it comes to Jimmy's career, as far as, like, would he be first ballot in any, you know, question of a Hall of Fame. But I do think that, you know, his talent, his ability to connect with the performers around him, and now as he's grown in his role as, you know, the star of NBC, and just his continual love for Saturday Night Live, I think is a large reason why SNL has continued into this next generation, because he continues to push forward every generation of the show and try and encourage younger viewers to come on in and watch the things that have happened in the past there. So I think he's an excellent representative. You saw it this season on season 50, where he's the one who's going to give Marty Short his five timers jacket. So again, he can't tell the story of SNL without Jimmy Fallon. So don't be a cork soaker. Vote for Jimmy for the Hall of Fame.
All right. Great conversation there between Bill and John. The rapport is palpable, folks. It's palpable. I really enjoyed that walk through memory lane. I was somebody who really didn't enjoy Jimmy Fallon on his run. It annoyed me. I was in comedy at the time, and, you know, it was sort of verboten by the directors I worked with and that sort of thing. So he bugged me, but I think I'm turned around. I don't know about first ballot, but like John said, he doesn't know either. But you can't tell the story without him. He was a Weekend Update anchor person. He had multiple reoccurring characters. I mean, without looking at his legacy, that's pretty slam dunk. So there's that. Let's get to the goods now. This is Jimmy Fallon with Britney Spears in one of his reoccurring sketches that we just talked about, or you just heard about, and that is Boston Teens. Enjoy.
This is the way the colonial settlers made their butter, with fresh cream and a little bit of salt. It would take almost 4 hours just to get one quart of butter. Would anyone like to take a churn?
Yeah, over here. Let him do it. He's had a lot of practice.
Yeah, familiar with the motion.
Yeah, he churns it about 4 times a day.
Okay, come on up.
Oh, my God.
Hey, Tommy.
Oh, my God.
Tommy, get me churning next to the St. Pauli girl.
What's your name, Patriot?
My name's Pat Sullivan. That's my girl Denise over there.
Yeah, but call me Zazu!
All right, I'm on my senior class trip. I'm here from Lexington, Mass., home state of Paul Revere, John Hancock, and Noma! Noma!
Okay, you want a churn? Oh, wow, you got strong arms. He would have definitely survived the hardships of a colonial lifestyle.
Hey, Matthew Washington, I can't understand a freaking word you're saying. That accent makes you sound...
You are!
Both y'all are.
Hey, where'd you get that dress? Ye old house of juggery?
Shut up, you're messing me up. Okay, everyone, continue down to the next signpost where Prince Kyle's gonna show you how to make Johnny cakes. Bye. Bye, everyone. Ugh, it is hot as a crotch out here.
Hey, yeah, drink this.
Yeah, it's Wireless grape juice, cognac, and wall tussin.
I call it the Zazu panty remover.
Shut up!
You shut up.
My friends and I, we used to make a drink like this.
Weird.
But we used to put peanut, you know, at the bottom, peanuts at the bottom of it.
Peanuts!
No, sir!
No, sir!
No, sir!
No, sir! That is rank!
Are you Irish? I like Irish guys.
Yeah, he is. That's why he bought me this clatter.
Oh, my goodness. That is so pretty. You have good taste.
Did he get that, Tommy?
Why are y'all taping this?
This is for our American studies final.
Yeah, we're supposed to write a report on the early settlers.
Yeah, I do all my projects on video because I suffer from several as yet unnamed learning disabilities.
He did not get proper nutrition during his toddler years.
Swear to God.
Yeah, his mother's breast milk is like Bailey's Irish cream.
That's neither here nor there.
She's no stranger to the inside of a squad car, believe me.
That's so sad.
Hey, is it hard to get a job here?
Ugh, you don't want to work here, believe me. The money sucks, and the guy that plays Thomas Jefferson is a total perv. There's just no jobs around here.
Yeah, the job market is really ridiculous right now.
Yeah, I got fired from Tom McCann for using the foot measure inappropriately.
Apparently my wiener is a lady size 5.
Niece! We missed the bus.
Freak, you were supposed to come get us.
No, I lost track of time. I went to the gift shop and bought this fife.
Ugh. Tommy, we missed our bus.
Oh, crap.
Ugh.
No way.
This is not happening.
Damn.
This is not happening.
Seriously.
Dang.
That is a sweet fife.
Yeah, I got it from my mom for Mom's Day.
All right, we are separated from our party. What would the early settlers have done?
No, I mostly just know how to make butter, but if you really get stuck, you could spend the night with me. Those two could sleep in the basement, but you can sleep on the floor in my room.
Not gonna happen, Betsy Ross.
Maybe you want to let him answer.
Sorry, Milk Maiden. You may be extremely hot, but what my girl Zazu lacks in beauty, charm, polish, and general physical health, she makes up with her warm personality and her permissive sexual practices. And I love her.
You are so gay.
You are.
What's up? I'm Frank.
Okay, y'all better get gone, because my next group's coming in, and I haven't cleaned the cream off my pole yet.
The cream off your pole?
Tommy, please tell me you got that.
Oh, boy. I don't know that you could do that one now. Maybe you could. I was just in a discussion with somebody yesterday saying, you know, with the right frame of mind, nothing should be off limits in comedy. There's always an interesting way to form it or frame it. But when it comes to context, when it comes to, you know, discourse and language that we used in the past, sometimes that becomes dicey. And, I'm not saying that's an edgy sketch, but it is a little edgier than we get maybe nowadays. So there's that. I really enjoyed this week's episode, and I hope you did too. I want to thank Matt. I want to thank Bill. And I want to thank John Schneider. Check out his work at the SNN, Saturday Night Network. And, become a Patreon and do the whole nine yards. I dare you. Next week, we are joined by our good friend, Kirsten Rajala. And she is going to be nominating our final nominee of the year, Cecily Strong. This should be another good one. That is going to be followed by the Don Pardo Award episode on May 18th. The dates are a little different here. The Season 7 Roundtable will be a live stream, and it will happen on Tuesday, May 27th. Dates subject to change. The class of Season 7 will be announced on June 1st, 2025 in a live presentation as well. So there's that. That's what I've got for you this week. I hope you enjoyed yourself. I certainly did. Do me a favor, though. And on your way out, as you walk past the Weekend Update exhibit, turn out the lights, because the SNL Hall of Fame is now closed.
Thanks for listening to the SNL Hall of Fame podcast. Make sure to rate, review, share, and subscribe to the show wherever you get your podcasts. Follow us on social media at SNLHOF. This is Kirk Lane saying, see you next week.
And such.